Hello, this is Brian Tracy. For over three decades now, it's been my pleasure to be associated with the wonderfully talented master motivator, the great Zig Ziglar. You know, Zig has thrilled people the world over and showed them how they can reach the pinnacle of their lives, reach the top, so to say, and overcome any obstacles that come their way. Now, Nightingale Conant is proud to bring you the 25th anniversary edition of one of the programs that started it all, Zig Ziglar's See You at the Top. You'll hear Zig's timeless information here, principles that still today have meaning, purpose, and relevance, and continue to help people to be their absolute best. You know how Zig says it, if you just help enough other people get what they want, you'll certainly get what you want. So sit back, relax, listen, reflect, and enjoy as Nightingale Conant brings you the 25th anniversary edition of Zig Ziglar's See You at the Top.
I have brought for you a brand new pair of glasses. Not only will they dramatically improve your sight, but more importantly, they will really do something for your vision.
That offer holds good whether you have poor eyesight or 20/20 vision, and it comes from the best in the business, Zig Ziglar.
Now, this is an amazing pair of glasses. Not rose-colored, I want to emphasize that, but this pair of glasses will permit you to see things that you have never seen before. You will be able to see some opportunities which have been there all the time, but which you have been overlooking.
Can you afford to pass up this opportunity? Do you want to focus more clearly on your goals and achieve the successes you've dreamed about? If your answer is yes, then this is an offer you can't turn down. It's guaranteed to see you to the top. The top, that's what we all aim for in both our personal and our professional lives. We all want to climb that stairway that leads to success. And Zig Ziglar shows just how to do it step by step. All we need to do is figuratively adjust our glasses and take a new look at our attitudes and our self-images. Today, Zig is at the top. The small-town cookware salesman has climbed steadily and today heads a Dallas corporation that employs 70 people. From this vantage point, he shares with you his secrets for making the successful journey. The master motivator will demonstrate how to turn the negatives in your life into healthy positives and how to achieve whatever goals you're aiming for. If you want to improve your attitude, strengthen your relationships with others, or learn how you can get the most out of life, you're about to find out how in See You at the Top. For almost 20 years, Zig Ziglar's motivation seminars have drawn capacity audiences worldwide. His I Can course is used in thousands of schools. His 7 books have sold millions of copies and been translated into several languages. And his audio and videotapes are consistent top sellers, a testimonial to the man and his methods. And now, Nightingale Conant invites you to join Zig Ziglar and his audience for an enlightening, entertaining journey. See you at the top.
Just as a matter of curiosity, how many of you have ever either heard me before or else this is your first time? Could I see your hands, please? Well, it's a delight to have you here this afternoon. We're going to have an exciting experience, and it starts, as do many of my experiences, with a story. John Jones was in New York City, and he wanted to go to Boston. He went out to the airport, bought himself a ticket, and headed for the gate. But as he was walking toward the gate, he passed a pair of scales, and being a little curious at that moment about how much he weighed, he took a coin out of his pocket, stepped up on the scales, inserted the coin, down came his fortune. Your name is John Jones. You weigh 188 pounds, and you're going to take the 220 to Boston. Well, he looked at that, and he said, you know, that's exactly right, but how on earth did they know that about me? Oh, he said, it's some kind of a little trick. So he pulled his hat down over his ears. He climbed back up on the scales, inserted another coin. Down came his fortune. Your name is still John Jones. You still weigh 188 pounds. You're still going to catch the 220 to Boston. Well, now he really was flabbergasted, because why would anybody go to all of that trouble to play that kind of a little trick on him? So he decided to go in the men's room and change clothes. He's going to see what was going on. So he did that, completely changed clothes, even put a little mustache on, came back out, pulled his hat down over his ears, stepped back up on the scale, inserted his coin, down came his fortune. Your name is still John Jones. You still weigh 188 pounds. But you just missed the 220 to Boston. Now, this series really is about the people who, for whatever reason, are missing the 220 to Boston, which really is getting the things out of life that you want. Well, the question is, what do you want? Well, I'm absolutely convinced that whether you live in Auckland, New Zealand, or Augusta, Maine, or anywhere in between, regardless of what you do in life, all of us basically want the same thing. I believe everybody wants to be happy. Never in my lifetime have I met an individual who said, "No, I want to be miserable." So far, everybody said, "I want to be happy." They want to be healthy. They want to be at least reasonably prosperous. I have an idea that some of you listening to this series of recordings want to be unreasonably prosperous. And that's all right, too. We're going to be talking about that. Everybody wants to be friends. Everybody wants to be secure. Everybody wants to have peace of mind. Everybody wants to be healthy. And everybody who has a family wants to have good family relationships. We call that the basic six: happy, healthy, reasonably prosperous, secure, have friends and peace of mind. And then if there is a family involvement, we want a good family relationship. Well, the problem is that a lot of people, though they want these things and though they want them in different amounts, for whatever reason, they might get on the 220 to Boston, and then somewhere along the way, somebody talks them off and they end up a little short of the things which they really want. Now, in order to get the things we want, I want to emphasize three things, which I will do repeatedly throughout the entire series. First of all, I will emphasize that you are what you are and you are where you are because of what's gone into your mind. And you can change what you are. You can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. I'm going to say to you that if you don't like who you are and where you are, don't worry about it, because you are not stuck with you. You can change you. You can grow. You can acquire. You can do things. You can be more than you are. As you shall see before we're through, there are so many things that we can learn which will make a dramatic difference in our lives and our performance. One of the other things I will repeatedly say is that you got to be before you can do. And you got to do before you can have. But that first emphasis is placed on the fact that you are what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. And you can change what you are and where you are by changing what goes into your mind. The second one I will emphasize is the fact that life is very tough. But whether you're a household executive, a student, a professor, an attorney, a physician, a truck driver, regardless of whether you're a salesperson, a sales manager, or in the manufacturing world or farming, doesn't make any difference what you do, I'm absolutely convinced that life is tough. But I'm even more convinced that when you're tough on yourself, that life is going to be infinitely more rewarding to you. Now, I believe life's exciting. I know it's exciting. Can be tremendously rewarding. But again, you see, we've got to be before we can do, and we've got to do before we can have. I will emphasize that. I never shall forget, I was doing a seminar once, and during one of the breaks, a lady came up to me. She had a question. She didn't want to look me in the eye to ask, but she wanted to ask the question. So she ducked her head and she said, "You kind of make a nice little old fee for them little old speeches you make, don't you?" Then she looked up, grinning from ear to ear. And I said to her, "Now, ma'am, who told you that? I have no idea where you got that information," but I said, "there's not a word of truth in it." And I want to put a stop to that vicious rumor before it gets any further. I want it to stay right here in this room. Because the reality is, I make a great big old fee for them little old speeches I make. But what I didn't tell her was the number of times that I have gotten up early enough in the morning to go down and speak to the men who drive the bread trucks, delivering the cakes and the pies to the restaurants and the grocery stores before you ever turned over in your bed the second time. I never told her about the number of times I've gone into the schools and the prisons and the churches and the halfway houses and the drug rehab centers to speak to those people. I never told her about the times I've gone in to speak to the vacuum cleaner organizations, the cookware organizations, the life insurance and real estate organizations. I didn't mention the number of times I've driven 50 miles or 100 miles at night, or on at least three different occasions I've driven as much as 200 miles at night, one way, my expense, to speak to a group of a dozen people, then have to drive back that night because I did not have enough money to pay a motel bill. I didn't tell her about all of those things, but I did every one of them. And I did them because I honestly thought I had something to say. I did it because I believed that someday I would get paid for saying what I had to say. And I did it because I knew before I would get paid, I had to learn how to say the things people really wanted and needed to hear. But I had to learn how to say it in such a way that they would be willing to hear it. No, life is tough. But again, when you're tough on yourself, life is going to be infinitely easier on you. It can be rewarding. You see, I did that for another very significant reason. I did it because, as my good friend Steve Brown from Atlanta, Georgia says, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. You see, the truth is, if all of us could take three lessons from the golf pro and then be good enough to qualify for the PGA Tour, all of us would go rushing out to the local pro, take our lessons, and then qualify for the tour. Then there would be no rewards in it or satisfaction from it. My friend, I'm here to tell you, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. Until you can learn to do it well. You don't make the same mistake again. You learn from your mistake, which really means that it is not a mistake. It has been an education, and you have grown from it. And that's what this course is all about, is growing in order to obtain. Now, I have a concept, and this is the third one, which we will emphasize throughout. And that is that you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. If I do one recording on 100 subjects or 100 recordings on the same subject, you will always hear me say that at least one time, that you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. Now, I might caution you, in case you haven't already figured this out, I always speak and write at the 7th grade, 3rd month level. Now, the reason I keep it at the 7th grade, 3rd month level is I found out a few years ago that if you kept it right there, that even the college professors would be able to follow right along with you and understand what you're saying. And you see, I just happen to believe that college professors are people too. I mean, they have their rights. But as a good friend of mine, Dr. C. Franklin, a college professor from Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, who gave me this little bit, had to say, you know, Zig, the great truths in life are the simple truths. He said, you don't need four moving parts and three syllables for it to be significant. If you think about it for a moment, Zig, you know, there are only three pure colors on the face of this earth, just three. But look at what Michelangelo did with those three colors. There are only 10 digits, but look at what Einstein did with those 10 digits. They're just seven notes, just seven. But look at what Chopin and Beethoven and Vivaldi did with those seven notes. Look what Elvis did with two. I mean, it just doesn't have to be that complicated. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, 262 words, that's all there are. And yet it's the most memorized speech in our culture today. 262 words delivered at the Battle of Gettysburg, which, as you well know, took place during the War of Northern Aggression. Depends on where you're educated now, doesn't it? But did you realize that out of those 262 words, that 202 of them were one syllable? Simple, direct. What I want to do is be simple and direct so that as these words go into your mind, they will reach you emotionally. You see, we've got to get emotionally involved or we're not going to really get involved. Or we can have all the facts on earth, and I'm going to give you a whole lot of those. But we want to get you involved in it emotionally. 7 or 8 years ago, I had the privilege of acquiring a computer here in our company. And I was all excited about that computer. I'm from a small town, and, you know, to have a big computer really turned me on. And so what I did is I went all over the country telling everybody about that wonderful computer, about what it would do. It's going to check the payroll, take care of the inventory, handle the mail outs. It's going to make the coffee, clean the kitchen. I mean, that computer was going to do everything. Well, let me ask you in this live audience today, how many of you have ever been mugged by a computer? Can I see your hand? Ooh, we were mugged by our computer. We were overbilling some, underbilling some, no billing some, double billing some. You can't imagine how upset some of our good customers would get when we would try for the third time to collect the same bill. I mean, they were just unreasonable. And so I came in here one day and I said, get rid of that sucker. Let her go. It is ruining us. Mail it out of here. Sell it, even if you have to take a discount on it. Well, fortunately, we couldn't sell it. Because one day, Dave and Marilyn Bauer came walking in this office, and they came to me, and they said, Mr. Ziegler, we can make that computer of yours laugh and talk and whistle and sing. Why, we can even make it work. I said, come on in. I was back in the computer room the other day. It was laughing and whistling and talking and singing. Happiest computer I've ever seen in my life. And work, why, some days one of our ladies will just mash one little button and that dude will work all day long. And I mean, it does good work, too. Now, what on earth happened to the computer? I'm now about to say something profound. I always tell folks when I'm about to say something profound because I found out a few years ago that an incredibly high percentage of my audiences do not recognize my profound statements as being profound unless I tell them in advance. So I always tell you in advance, what did they do to that computer? Very simple. They changed the input. And when they changed the input, they changed the output. Now, I know even you listeners on the recording are sitting there somewhat stunned. Ziegler, that's profound. Man, have you been in a barrel somewhere? Why, everybody knows all that. Fifth grade kids know that about computers, that when you change the input, you change the output. Why, as old as time itself, the good book itself says, as you sow, so also shall you reap, 2,000 years ago. And you say that is profound. I say it's profound for this reason, folks. We sometimes forget that it applies in our lives every single day. See, it's not having information that is going to make you happy and successful. It's the application and the using of that information that's going to make the dramatic difference in your life. You see, you are what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. You can change what you are and you can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind. You see, you are what you are and where you are by the thoughts you've had and the actions you've taken. So if you want to change where you are and change what you got, you're going to have to change what you've been doing. Because if you keep on doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep on getting what you've been getting. See, seventh grade, third month level. I mean, I don't want to confuse anybody. All right. Now, if we really want to be happy and we really want to be healthy and we really want to be reasonably prosperous and secure, if we want to have friends and peace of mind and good family relationship, let me just ask you the question. Doesn't it make sense to plant those thoughts in our mind on a regular basis? Doesn't that figure? Answer's yes, isn't it? when I ask the tough ones, I'll help you just a little bit there with the answers, all right? Now, you see, if you think about it just for a moment, before you do anything, you've had some thought about it. Now, it might not have been but 1/10,000th of a second, but thought precedes the action. So if you want to change the action, you got to change the thinking. But if you're going to change the thinking, you've got to change the input in your mind. How many of you have ever gone to a movie and laughed? How many of you have ever gone to a movie and cried? Yeah. Now, do you really think it's because they put something in the seats? Or is it because they put something on the screen that went into your mind? This mind of ours is so enormously important. Not too long ago, I was coming in on a plane, which is generally the way I fly. I was seated next to an old boy, couldn't help but notice that he had his wedding band on the index finger of his left hand. Now, any way you cut it, that's a little unusual. That's different. So I commented on it. I said, "Friend, you got your wedding band on the wrong finger." He said, "Yeah, I married the wrong woman." You know? Well, I don't know if he married the wrong woman or not. I'm delighted to be able to say I did not marry the wrong woman. Last November, we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary. Thank you. Thank you. So, obviously, I didn't marry the wrong woman. Now, we've been married 41 years. But we had heard so much about the 50th that we just decided to go ahead and celebrate early. And I'm here to tell you that is some celebration, and we're going to celebrate it again this year. I encourage you to do the same thing. Now, I have no idea if that old boy married the wrong woman or not, but I'm totally convinced that most people have some wrong ideas about what success really is and how you achieve it. A lot of times they equate or confuse standard of living with quality of life. Now, we're going to be looking at standard of living. We want to raise that too, if that happens to be one of your objectives. But throughout, we're going to be dealing an awful lot also with quality of life, because that's what really it's all about. Many years ago, I read where some wise philosopher had said that one picture was worth 10,000 words. I've heard people say that many, many times. But I'm convinced that anyone who says and believes that has never really read the 23rd Psalm. They've never really read the Declaration of Independence. They never really prayed the Lord's Prayer. Now, all of those are words. They're just words. But they're words that have made a dramatic difference in people's lives. I love what Charles Osgood, the word merchant, says. Charles says that compared to the spoken word, a picture is a pitiful thing indeed. Yeah, the spoken word can have a dramatic impact on an awful lot of lives. My purpose here is to get you involved in emotional words and pictures, because we've got to literally get your heart involved. A high jumper broke a world's record, and somebody asked him, "How did you break the record?" And he simply said, "I threw my heart over the bar, and the rest of me followed." Our words can make a dramatic difference in our lives. I was disappointed several years ago to read that up in a little community in Pennsylvania, there was a considerable hullabaloo about a couple of books that were being taught in the school. Some of the parents objected to the language which was used in the books. Now, they did not demand that the books be banned or burned. They simply requested from the school that since their children were not permitted to use that kind of language at home, that they just assign them different books to read. I was speaking in Washington and picked up a copy of the Washington Post. And I was reading one of the editorials. And the editorial writer was saying it's ridiculous that those parents do not want their children to be exposed to that language. That's the real world. And what we need to do is get those kids ready to go out and survive in the real world. Well, you see, I believe parents and educators have a much higher goal. And that is not to get our kids ready to go out and survive in a world of foul language and filth. but rather to go out and change and upgrade that world. I agree with Dr. Bruno Bettelheim, the great University of Chicago psychologist, who says that our kids need to hear lots of fairy tales. They need to read lots of fairy tales. They need to see lots of fairy tales. He said, in the fairy tales, it's always the good guy versus the bad guy. And in the fairy tale, the good guy always wins. Now, he said, I know the good guy doesn't always win. And the kids know that the good guys and gals don't always win. But deep down, they know that's the way it ought to be. We need to have them reaching for higher ground, if you will. It disappoints me to hear people use filthy barnyard language. The reason it does is our language is the best reflection of our thinking that we have. You see, words paint pictures. And once those pictures are painted, then the mind goes to work to complete the picture. And no nation or no individual can rise above the pictures which have been planted in their minds. That's one of the reasons throughout this series you won't hear a single word that is offensive, that is profane or vulgar. If we want to have you reaching for the good pictures that make a difference. Now, there's a practical reason also to that. Not that that's not practical, but, you know, over a period of time, it's been my privilege. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association from Phoenix, Arizona. And from time to time, I have a privilege of speaking to the other speakers. And one of the things I almost always say to them is be careful of your language. Because thus far, I have never yet heard of a corporation or a company saying, you know, we really ought to get that guy and come make a speech for us. He has got the foulest mouth I think I have ever heard. Or we ought to get this guy or that gal to come talk to us, to tell the dirtiest jokes. You can't believe what dirty jokes they tell. I so well remember one of the national companies for whom I've done a lot of work asked me about another speaker. Who would I recommend? And I made a recommendation, and they sent for some of his tapes. And then they called him and said, we cannot use you because you've got some stories in there and some language in there that's inappropriate. Well, I had no idea that was in his tapes. And he said, well, that's no problem. I'll just take those stories and those words out. What they said to him was very significant. They said, we were really looking for a speaker who had never put him in there in the first place. I've never yet heard of a young girl going home and saying, Dad, y'all let me go out with this fella. You can't believe what a filthy mouth he's got. I mean, he really does, Dad. Now, what does all of this say? All of it says that what I'm saying is a practical approach. Use the language that will get you further along in life. And the first thing you know, you'll be using the right words, and more importantly, you'll be believing those right words. Since your faith in the future dramatically affects your performance in the present, it's extremely important for every parent, coach, teacher, manager, employer to be a teaching optimist. As you know, an optimist is a person who, when they wear their shoes out, just figure they're back on their feet. So it's important that we be optimistic. Who knows? Maybe by the end of this series, you'll be just as optimistic as this old boy down home was. There was a flash flood, and he was caught up on his rooftop. And one of his neighbors came riding by on a hen house. And he shouted to our good friend who was sitting up on his roof. He said, hey, John, he said, this really is bad, isn't it? And old John said, no, I said, everything's all right. He said, what do you mean everything is all right? Why, he said, look a there. Said, you're going to lose every bit of crops you got. Said, this flood just ruined them. He said, oh, said, that's no problem. Already lost the crop anyhow. As a matter of fact, the county agent was out here just last week. Said, what we really need was some water on the land. And this sure takes care of that, doesn't it? He said, yeah, but man, this high water, just look at it. Why, it's ruined your hen house and your ducks and all that sort of thing. He said, no, you forget, I sold all my hens. All I'm raising is ducks. And he said, look at that, every one of them just swimming around out there having a good time. Man, he said, everything is fine. Well, our friend was not through with our good-natured optimist yet. So he said, yeah, but man, look at the water rising. Why, first thing you know, it's going to be up to your windows. He said, boy, I hope so. Said, they're powerful dirty and need washing. Now, you know, the interesting thing is, I believe that we can change our very outlook on life. Now, I'm not talking about a head-in-the-sand ostrich approach, which says that everything is all right as the world comes tumbling down all around us. But I love the definition that William Arthur Ward gives to optimism when he says that real optimism is aware of problems, but recognizes the solutions, knows about difficulties, but believes they can be overcome, sees the negatives, but accentuates the positives, is exposed to the worst, but expects the best, has reason to complain, but prefers to smile. Now, that's a logical, sensible approach to what optimism is all about. Now, undoubtedly, all of you have noticed in this live audience, as I have been a-talking, I've been a-walking. And as I've been a-walking, I've been a-looking. And I cannot help but notice that this is an extraordinarily young audience. Bunch of kids, really, is what we've got here today, so I'm delighted to be in your presence. As a matter of fact, I notice that there's no one here even old enough to know what I'm about to tell you. So I'll just have to tell you. When you reach a certain age, there are physical and chemical changes which take place in the body. And as you know, there's a lot of pollution out in the air. And when the pollution in the air gets together with the physical and chemical changes in the body, what happens is it destroys the strength of the lenses in your glasses. Maybe some of you older than I thought you were. Now, that's especially true if you wear bifocals. Well, that happened to me. So I went to see my good buddy Bob Vodvarka for my new examination and my new fitting. And he went through all of the little procedures, you know, all of the tests. And he finally finished and he said, okay, Zig, that's it. I've written the prescription for your glasses. See me next Tuesday and we'll fit them. Well, the following Tuesday, I walked in, he put the glasses on me, you know how they always do a little adjustment and how they get down and look at you. And finally, he said, well, he said, they look good. How do they feel? I said, Bob, they feel good too. He said, well, you're on your way. Well, my car was parked about 20 or 25 feet from his front door. So as I stepped out the front, I did that final adjustment on these new glasses, you know, and I headed for my car. Now, you talking about a high-stepping dude, old Zig was really picking him up and putting him down. Now, obviously, I did not know that until I drew abreast of the car. And there was my right leg up there about 4 feet, and I could see the reflection in the window. And you know how you do when you've done something not overly bright, how you think everybody in town not doing a thing in the world but looking right at you. So I looked around, and obviously nobody's paying the least bit of attention to me. But realizing how utterly ridiculous I must have looked, I couldn't help it. I just laughed out loud. I hollered. Then I got excited. Because literal truth, that day, for the first time, I understood what my role in our society is. What I do is I go all over this country, and for that matter, many, many other countries as well, fitting people with brand new glasses. And what I've done for you who are in this live audience, and for those of you who are listening to this recorded message, I have brought for you a brand new pair of glasses. Not only will they dramatically improve your sight, but more importantly, they will really do something for your vision. Helen Keller said it so well when somebody asked her if there was anything worse than being blind. And she said, yes, it would be to be able to see but not have any vision. In reality, these are vision glasses. Now, I want to emphasize a lot of thing about these paraglasses. From time to time, they might need a little adjustment. Not a whole lot, but they will need some from time to time. But the fit is going to be perfect. I'd like to emphasize that these are not rose-colored glasses. As a matter of fact, they are anything but rose-colored because I will emphasize repeatedly that life is tough. But when you're tough on yourself, life is going to be infinitely easier on you. In my judgment, and I've thought about this a great deal, the real tragedy of the 20th century is the fact that we have raised a generation to believe that everything has got to look good and smell good and taste good. It's got to be fun, or I'm not going to have anything to do with it. So many times our young people believe that they've got to have instant success, instant gratification, instant fun, or they're not going to get involved. Let me give you a couple of examples. The average 18-year-old American has watched over 15,000 hours of television, has listened to 11,000 hours of music. That's 26,000 hours of being entertained. Now, at the moment, I'm not going to dwell on whether that input is good or bad or indifferent. But did you realize that 26,000 hours means that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for approximately 3 years, they've been spectators to life. They have been entertained. Now, ladies and gentlemen, life is not a spectator sport. Life is a participator sport. We have got to get involved. The average 20-year-old American has witnessed 1 million commercials. By the time they're 8 years old, they have witnessed in excess of 200,000 commercials. By the time they're 21 years old, they've seen over 100,000 beer and wine commercials. 60%, roughly, of the commercials our children 8 years old and under watch are selling toys, and they're selling cereals. And they make some promises. If you'll just eat this cereal, you'll develop those big muscles. You can kick the winning field goal. You can score the winning basket. All you got to do is eat this cereal, and you're really going to be a hero. If you will buy these toys, all the kids will come playing in your living room and backyard. You'll be the most popular kid in town. When they get to be about 8 or 9 years old, they realize that life doesn't have 30 and 60 second solutions. Did you know that's where kids first start thinking about drugs and suicide? See, life is tough. I don't care what you do, life is tough. But again, when you're tough on yourself, life is going to be infinitely easier on you. I believe that's what we need to emphasize. So much of the music today says, I want to be free. You know, I want to do my thing. Well, the basic problem with that is this. You take the train off the tracks, it's absolutely free. Nobody has any control over it, but it can't go anywhere. You take the steering wheel out of the automobile, it's absolutely free. Nobody has any control over it, but it can't go anywhere. Unless we exercise certain controls over our lives and our children until they get older enough so that they can make intelligent decisions, unless we help them with direction in life, we really are doing an enormous disservice. Now, life is tough. But again, when you're tough on yourself, life can be enormously rewarding. It's a lot of fun. It's tremendously exciting. And now for another profound statement. Remember, I did tell you, I was always going to warn you. When you do the things you ought to do, when you ought to do them, the day will come when you can do the things you want to do, when you want to do them. Now, this is an amazing pair of glasses. Not rose-colored, I want to emphasize that, but this pair of glasses will permit you to see things that you have never seen before. Right there in your own home, right there in your own neighborhood, you will be able to see some opportunities which have been there all the time, but which you have been overlooking. Last year, Forbes magazine reported on a study they did of entrepreneurs. They discovered that invariably entrepreneurs made their money and achieved their success when they went to a new location. Now, before you start thinking in terms of, hey, I got to move somewhere else, don't pack your bags quite yet. Let me finish the story. The rest of the story is this. Some of those people move from Houston to Chicago to make their fortune. But others move from Chicago to Houston to make their fortune. The reality is that location doesn't have anything to do with it. But the way you see your location literally has everything to do with it. Why did these entrepreneurs make their money in new locations, their success in new locations? Very simple. It's called expectations. The chairman of the board of the Xerox Corporation just returned from his 25th trip to Japan. And he said the difference in what they're doing and what we're doing can really be summed up in that word, expectations. They're expecting bigger things to happen. And that's always been the American way of life, expecting the best and working to be the best. And thank goodness we've turned the corner, and that's the direction we're headed back in. But these entrepreneurs, when they went in the new location, they weren't worried about City Hall and the bureaucracy. They went in with an entirely new vision, expecting things to happen, and that's what happens. You see, your business is not good or bad out there. Your business is good or bad right here between your own two eyes. The other thing about these glasses that you will really appreciate is the fact that enables you to get a new vision on a lot of things. The reason the entrepreneurs were successful is this. You take the letters N-O-W-H-E-R-E. And when these opportunists, these entrepreneurs, went into this new location, they drew the line right after the W and said, opportunity is now here. That's the way the optimist does things. The pessimist draws the line after the O and it says the opportunity is nowhere. So the way you see things with this amazing pair of vision glasses which you're being fitted with, you will be able to see opportunities that you have been overlooking before. But this pair of glasses does another amazing thing. It lets you see people differently. University of Pittsburgh last year did a study. And in this study, they discovered that tall men and women do better than short men and women. Now, before you folks who are a little shorter raise up in indignation and have anything to say, like you're going to go get you some new platform shoes or whatever, please listen to the rest of the story. The local paper called me and they said, did you read that report out of the University of Pittsburgh? I said, I'm familiar with it. They said, what do you think about it? Is there any validity to the fact that tall men and women do better than short men and women? I said, well, of course there's validity to it. And obviously, I believe it because it is true. Now, again, don't get upset. Wait just one more minute before I get through, please. Let me ask all of you in this live audience a question. And those of you who are listening to the recording, you answer this as we go along. How many of you have ever been lost in a strange neighborhood? Can I see your hands? How many of you who've been lost in a strange neighborhood ever saw some kids playing on a school ground or a street corner, and you went over to them and you said, how do you get from here to there? Can I see your hands if you've ever done that, okay? Now, would you please answer the next question, everybody at the same time, out loud? Which one of the kids did you ask? Out loud, please, quick. The tallest one. Might have been the dumbest kid in town. Now, you know without me telling you that the distance between the heel and the head has got nothing to do with what's stored there. I mean, you know that, don't you? All right? Then why do tall men and women do better than short men and women? Not a thing in the world but expectancy. Now, why is the expectancy there? It's because we put it there. That's why. Have you noticed the difference in the vocabulary we use when we deal with the large baby as versus the tiny baby? With the taller child as versus the shorter child? We address them all together differently. My, what a fine looking young man. Or my, what a fine looking young woman. But what about the shorter one? Oh, isn't she cute? And you see, we set up an entirely different expectancy. And because you treat people exactly like you see them, it is extraordinarily important that we learn to see people properly. The beautiful thing about this pair of glasses is the fact that you will only see tall men and tall women with this pair of glasses. And because you will see them that way, you will treat them that way. And because you will treat them that way, that means that you will help them to be the person they're capable of being. Why is that so important? Andrew Carnegie, the great steel magnate of the last century, at one time had 43 millionaires working for him. He was the penniless lad from Scotland who immigrated to America and built the steel empire. A reporter got wind of the fact that he had these millionaires working for him, and he went to him and said, "Mr. Carnegie, how on earth did you manage to hire 43 millionaires?" And Mr. Carnegie said, "Well, none of them were millionaires when I hired them." Then the question, Mr. Carnegie, obviously is, what did you do to develop these people to the degree that they became so valuable to you that you could pay them so much money that they became millionaires? And Andrew Carnegie taught us a great lesson when he said, you develop millionaires in exactly the same way you mine gold. When you go in a gold mine, you go in looking to move tons and tons of dirt. You go in expecting to move tons and tons of dirt. But you don't go in there looking for the dirt. You go in there looking for the gold. You find what you're looking for. Gentlemen, if you treat your wife like a thoroughbred, you'll never end up with a nag. Ladies, if you treat your husband like a champ, you'll never end up with a chump. But you've got to see them that way before you will treat them that way. And the beautiful thing about this pair of glasses is the fact that it will let you see only tall people. But there's something else that's tremendously exciting about this pair of glasses. This pair of glasses will literally let you watch people grow. And that's so enormously important. About a year ago, I was in Winnipeg, Canada. I had dinner at a man's home whom I love very much. His name is Bernie Lofchick. We're so close. It's always been Brother Zig and Brother Bern. I watched his kids grow up. Later, I tell the story in great detail about David Lofchick, who was born with cerebral palsy. And as I sat there that evening at dinner, visiting with his youngest daughter, Mindy, and David, and Bernie and Elaine, it was one of the most fascinating experiences of my life because David is now enormously successful in the world of real estate. Mindy, at that time, was a prosecutor for the Crown. And as they were talking there about all the involvements they were in, she in her legal profession, he in his real estate profession, I kept thinking, you know, I almost don't believe this. I watched them grow. One of the problems that a lot of parents and a lot of employers have is they never quite can recognize the incredible growth of the people that they are around. A lot of times they come in at an entry-level position, and they work hard, and they study, and they learn. But management sometimes neglects to recognize that growth and encourage them to grow even more and reward them for their growth. But fortunately, because of this pair of glasses and a lot of other factors, you're going to be able to watch that happen. I was so intrigued myself last Saturday morning. I came in to pick up some things, and one of our staff members was here picking up some things, and I said to her, "What in the world are you doing here on Saturday morning?" She said, well, I speak to the Chamber of Commerce this evening and I needed to pick up a couple of things. Then all of a sudden it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I had known her since she was a student in school. I'd watched her and her husband when they were still single and courting. I was there when they got married. I had watched this growth, and all of a sudden it hit me what an enormously effective staff member she is. She was instrumental in doing a lot of the work in our support material for our video training program. And as I walked out, I could not help but say, you know, I am so glad that my glasses are well adjusted. What a tremendous talent we would have missed. And I wonder how many people miss talent because they don't adjust those glasses and watch that individual grow and let them have the opportunity to use this incredible ability that is within. It's an amazing pair of glasses. Let me tell you the most delightful part, though, about this pair of glasses is the fact that this pair of glasses also will turn inwardly. And they will let you look at the real you. I'm going to make you a promise. Before you finish this recording, listening to it, you are going to like you better than you do at this moment. Now, I know that sounds like a strong promise. Now, I'm not talking about developing a super inflated, I am the greatest kind of an ego. You know, conceit's a weird disease, isn't it? Makes everybody sick except the one who's got it. No. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a simple, healthy self-acceptance of the real you. Emerson was 100% right when he said, what lies behind you and what lies before you pales in significance when compared to what lies within you. He also said, ability without honor has no value. I love what St. Augustine said in 399 A.D., and I paraphrase him. St. Augustine said that man travels hundreds of miles to gaze at the broad expanse of the ocean. He looks in awe at the heavens above. He stares in wonderment at the fields and the mountains and the rivers and the streams. And then he passes himself by without a thought. God's most amazing creation. Man was designed for accomplishment. He's engineered for success. He's endowed with the seeds of greatness. I believe it with all my heart that that's true. We have an incredible amount of power and ability inside of us, but we've never quite learned how to reach up and insert the key and turn on the ignition to release that incredible power. You see, folks, a $20 gold piece, according to my good friend Reuben Saverling, a $20 gold piece and a 10-cent piece have exactly the same value if they're at the bottom of the ocean. It's only when we bring them up and release them and put them to work that we're going to realize the success, and later we'll define success, total success, that we're capable of achieving. The basic problem, a lot of people are what we call prisoners of hope. Not really expecting, but hoping that someday they'll walk down the street and they'll see a box and they'll kick it and out of it will come 50,000 brand new $10 bills. They go down to the seashore and look out to see if their ship is coming in. But deep down, they know that it never left the port. They're prisoners of hope.